So after your judge has found your client removable, you either designate a country, you don't designate a country. I don't designate a country. Why should I? And then you declare relief. Okay, what relief, is, if any, will your client be seeking? Adjustment of status, cancellation of removal in the alternative. Declare everything. Cancellation of removal in the alternative, voluntary departure if you want to. And you say you want all those forms of relief. And then the judge says, fine by me. Here's when all your applications are due. The trial attorney will lean over and hand you a document that says filing certain applications for relief in removal proceedings or before the immigration court. And that will have very specific instructions. You file a copy of the application you're going to file. You file your G-28. You file your fee. You file a copy of those instructions, the fee, and you send that all to the Texas Service Center, who then sends you a receipt notice and biometric notice. So you always have to pay for biometrics. Those two documents you file with the court along with the actual application that you're going to be filing with the court. And that is also how you get biometrics done, which are necessary in every single case. Filing asylum applications are a little bit different. You send that all to Nebraska Service Center.
Affirmative filing. No, sorry, defensive filing.
I just repeat whatever she says. You file all that, but the instructions are on both sides of that. It just follow those to the T. The fees are paid to USCIS, and if you need a fee waiver, if your client needs a fee waiver, and I will say there are some judges that say, well, if they can pay you, they can certainly pay this fee. I'll leave it that aside for a while, but if you need a fee waiver, then what you do is you file the application with the request for fee. There is a form now that EOIR uses. In the past, we would just kind of put that together in the motion for fee waiver, but now it's a specific form, and it requests a lot of information about your client's finances. In my experience lately, and I don't know if this is in reaction to public charge issues or what, but I'm seeing judges very hostile to granting any non-detained fee waiver for sure. Even detained folks are judges are hesitant, usually, and they put the blame squarely on
it. And I do think that it's fee waivers in general, because I'm having a lot of U visa where you have to pay for the waiver.
Yeah.
And those fee waivers are being denied. The I-192.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an expensive waiver, too.
Yeah. It's almost $1,000.
Yeah, $980.
Supporting documents. Yes, they can make or break your case. Hopefully they can be used to make your case. Review everything prior to submitting to the court, because believe me, there are judges and trial attorneys that when they do their job, they do it very well, and they will find any discrepancy in anything within those documents to use against your client. So you do know what's in those documents. Know every word that's on the page. The way I organize my documents when I'm submitting them with the immigration court is to arrange documents by element of statutory eligibility. Here's the physical presence. Here is the good moral character. Here is the extreme hardship. Here is the identifying document. Here are the other things that prove up eligibility. The more well-organized your documents are, the easier it is for everybody to get a sense. And when you have a lot of good documentation that's well-organized, you're going to find that when you get to court finally, sometimes you're going to, if you have reasonable TA, reasonable IJ, you can narrow down issues and you don't have to be fighting over things that seem to be pretty clear, at least on statutory eligibility at a minimum. And then you can just fight about discretion.
But you should know from that perspective, you should know your judge and the court that you're going into.
Yeah.
In Dallas, we have one judge that wants you to load your document, your case, with lots of documentation and lots of supporting evidence. And then we have another judge that says, if you've got so much evidence, why are you trying so hard? What is it that makes you try so hard to convince me? And so you
it
really
doesn't even make sense.
So you really need to know what your, you know, what your judge is looking for, and the best way to do that is talk to practitioners that are in that jurisdiction. And now the new kind of thing that's been thrown in the mix is that all of a sudden you'll call the 800 number and you've got a judge that you've never even heard of, because now it's a video judge and they're, you know, trying to deal with the backlog. So you've been put with someone that's never been exposed to your case, mm-hmm. That you know nothing about, that you're going to now have to present a merits case. And in your frame of mind from the legal strategy perspective, you're like, okay, I don't know anything about this guy. I know the judges that I practice before most of the time. And so I know how they function. I know how they run their courtrooms. I know what they're looking for. But if you throw some new guy in the mix and now this judge is seeing your case for the very first time, It was my own mental setback, because I thought I was ready, and all of a sudden now I've been thrown off my game because I have to reorganize my thoughts and figure out how am I going to present this. In my case, it was a guy who had been immigration judge for 4 months, mm-hmm. and I had a mental capacity case that I had been working on for 2 years. And so I'm like, who is this guy and what's he going to know about this type of case that is extremely complicated? So then, of course, I had to Google stalk him. And I found out that he used to be a military judge. And he was discharged from the JAG Corps because he had unduly influenced a prosecutor.